to say it. Somebody should. Let's talk about tool time. Let's talk about bull wine, yeah. You're asking the questions that nobody could. Like where the bone thugs in, are they in harmony? Do, do, help a snowman, do.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to another one of these. Today's book that we're covering, because that's our new format, you know, because we need something to do, is a book called Vermis, Lost Dungeons and Forbidden Woods by somebody named Plastaboo. it's hard when you're trying to, like, talk about something like this, because you're like, I don't know. You're trying to talk, you know, take something. I'm about to try and take this seriously, but at the same time, I recognize there's something silly about it, right? And you're like, well, I guess the author being named Plastaboo helps. Plastibo. Where at the same time, I'm like, it's like this, right? Like, if I was showing up to a job, in the past, when I would show up for, like, I was applying for a library job, I would kind of try and, like, overdress a little bit, because I was trying to do, like, you know, what they did to Dana Scully on X-Files, Gillian Anderson, where it's like, well, shit, she's kind of young and way too attractive. So we kind of got to dowdy her up a little bit and get these big blazers on her and stuff so that she's, like, believable as an FBI agent. You know, when I was younger, I don't think this would be a problem anymore, but when I was younger and going for a library job, I'd be like, well, I'm going to Agent Scully myself a little bit and dowdy up a little for the purpose of, making them think I'm like a real guy. Because I am a real guy, but I could understand looking at me and thinking, seems a little young. So anyway, with Vermis, Lost Dungeons and Forbidden Woods, Plastaboo, I think having, like, a regular ass name would probably serve better in terms of the premise of this whole thing is crazy. And so I don't know if the name helps. Here's what Vermis is. Vermis is a guidebook to a game that doesn't exist and never has existed and probably never will exist unless some weirdo just makes it, which would kind of ruin the whole thing. But we'll get into that. So when I say it's a guidebook, it's kind of like a walkthrough of the game. It doesn't tell you every little thing, but it gives you some hints and kind of tells you some things. And it tells you how things in the game world work. You know, like if you encounter this enemy, this is what it will try to do to you. And if you defeat it this way, you know, this is what will happen. And if you defeat it, if you don't defeat it, this is what will happen. You know, stuff like that. When you arrive at this place, if you collected, you know, this certain item, you'll be able to do this. And if you haven't, then you'll have to do this. So basically it sets up this, medieval Dark Souls-ish world, right? Where you're like dungeon crawling-ish. You know, you're going across a landscape that's got a bunch of monsters and bullshit like that and journeying to some kind of thing, you know, a dungeon, a tower, or whatever, and then going into that dungeon and so on and so forth. I mean, I'm fascinated by this book because, like, it's such an interesting and different way to tell a story. Like, it doesn't feel like what this person wanted to do was make a video game and then was like, oh, fuck that, making a video game is hard, which it is. I've done it a couple times and it's not easy. I mean, it's a lot more work than you think, right? But I also don't think it was like they wanted to write a fantasy novel and then, you know, we're like, oh, fuck this. Like, I mean, because to me, part of the appeal of this is a fantasy novel. Something I don't love about fantasy novels is, like, it's not that things are explained, it's that it feels to me like everything is explained to an insane degree. You know what I mean? I've tried to read Dune, I think, 3 or 4 times now. And it's like, when you get to that part, and it's towards the beginning, and it's talking about, like, a sword. And it's talking about, like, the lineage of a sword. And I'm just like, yeah, I just can't do that. You know what I mean? I'm like, I know for some people that's what it's about, right? Like, that's what, I guess you psychos who are, like, into that kind of shit, it's like, that's what I like. I like the lore. It feels like a real lived-in world, you know, that this sword has a history or whatever. But for me, it's like, I don't want that kind of information in the real world. You know what I mean? That doesn't, it actually doesn't help me feel like the world is real and lived in. It kind of has the opposite effect. Someone's going to talk about, like, well, this sword was made by so-and-so and passed down to so-and-so and da-da-da-da. And I'm just like, why are you telling me? I do not care about this. I don't care. You know what I mean? There's a bunch of people running around doing stuff, and people are, like, interstellar traveling somehow by doing cocaine or whatever. I'm like, that you cannot present me with that and then tell me about a sword. You know what I'm saying? It's like me telling you, I don't know, that I have an in-depth review of paying my car insurance or something. And you're like, yeah, aren't you going to tell us the story of, you know, I'm like, oh, this scar? Well, let me start by explaining to you at what liability is, you know, liability only or whatever. And then, like, 20 minutes into it, you're like, I don't think this leads directly into the story of his scar at all. I think this is just extra information he's using. And I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to fill out the world for you, asshole. Take it easy. But anyway, Vermis is kind of the opposite of that, because it's like, it gives you little pieces of things like, you know, a sword, and it's like, this is a sword that does whatever, but it's not, like, all narratively laid out. You know, there'll be, like, a page and it has a bunch of swords on it, and it kind of tells you about the swords, or it'll have these enemies or whatever. So it's like, it's really interesting. It's like, this is the first time I think I've enjoyed what I would call world building in a book. You know what I mean? It's just, it's like a dark fantasy thing. But also, I'm just sort of really interested in the way you could write a book, and you can write a book that's a game guide for a game that's never made. And, like, there are elements of storytelling that spares you from having to actually write. And then there are other things that, you know, it weakens about storytelling. You know what I mean? It comes with some very distinct advantages and disadvantages. But, like, I'm always interested in a sort of nonfiction framework to tell a fictional story. You know what I mean? Like, I wrote one time, and it was, like, about a haunted object, basically. And I wrote it as a Zillow listing, because it's like the house was for sale, and there's a wooden box that just a small wooden box that sits in the middle of the garage floor, and it cannot be moved. And you won't be able to, like, you can't move it. But also, if you attempt to move it, something bad will probably happen. You know, and then putting that in among the square footage of the house and, like, the mountain views and, like, whatever. And you're like, oh, this is kind of interesting. There was something about it to me that was very funny, because I liked the idea of whenever you see a haunted house, like in a movie or a show or whatever, it always seems like it's like this grand Victorian manor. And I was picturing, like, where I live, which is like a 2-bedroom condo. And it's like, how come a 2-bedroom condo couldn't be haunted? You know what I mean? I guess, you know, because it hasn't been around since, like, the 1700s or something. But, like, fuck that. Like, who cares? Why can't something be haunted now? Everything that's been haunted was haunted back before, you know, before the Civil War. And now nothing else is becoming haunted. Well, that should make it pretty easy then. We should be able to root out all the haunted shit with not much trouble. Eh? But anyway, like, I like when you can take a sort of non-fictional format and apply it to a fictional story, because I think that it provides a richness to use an obnoxious, like, literary term, I guess. I don't know. There's something about the idea, too, of, like, it adds a little something to, like, you think of the game sort of as lost media, you know what I mean? And this is all that remains of it or something. And that's, it's just a, it adds an atmosphere to the whole affair that I thought was very fun. And I don't know, it was just something weird about it where I was like, how come nobody's, you know, I'm sure somebody's done this before, but I'm like, how come this isn't like a more common thing? And maybe it wouldn't work, you know, if you read a bunch of them. But I've read two by Plastiboo. There's Vermis and Godhusk, and they were both great. Like, I enjoyed both of them. They're both really weird. They're both creepy and eerie and just very fun. So I highly recommend both. And it's like, I don't know, there's something about things don't have to be real in order to be affecting. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like the narrative would be any more real if the game existed, right? Like, it would also be fiction. Like, all of it would be fiction. So why can't you write a fiction that's sort of a layer on top of another fiction? Or, you know, if the game had existed and there was a guide to it, and then you pulled the game out from under the guide, and the guide was all that remained, that doesn't mean that the guide, you know, the guide would become very interesting, because it's like, well, this is the only way to access that world. This is the only way. Does it seem like I got stoned before I did this? Because I promise you I didn't. But it, you know, I'm sure it seems like it. But like things don't have to be real to affect us. Like, to bring this back to my personal side again. So after I had all my, you know, I had my thrombosed hemorrhoid, the blood clot taken out of it and whatever, and I was recovering. And the guy at urgent care, the doctor, was like, I'm going to set up a referral to surgery for you just in case. You know, I don't really know what's going on back there, but you probably should go and see a surgeon for whatever. And I was like, all right, cool. And, but you know, so then I looked up and I was like, well, what is hemorrhoid surgery exactly? And it looks like there are basically two kinds. One is like they do a banding process, which if you have an internal hemorrhoid is basically painless and, you know, seems to work pretty good. And if you have an external one, they have to do a hemorrhoidectomy. And the more I read about that, the more I was like, oh, fuck. Because pretty universally seems like people are like, this is one of the most painful surgeries possible. It is like such a cosmic joke to me that for some reason, there are like so many nerve endings in and around your butthole. You know what I mean? I'm like, is that necessary? Like, and you know, I don't receive pleasure in and around my butthole. So for me, it's like, eh. But like, is it necessary? What was the purpose of that? You know what I mean? Could we get by with fewer? It seems like we could. I, you know, if I'm just Monday morning quarterbacking God here, seems like we could have maybe cut that down a bit. I don't know. It seems like they're not going to use for me other than, you know, pain. but yeah, it was basically, you know, it's not a great idea to like spend much time with Dr. Google, right? Regardless of what your medical situation is. Here's the funny thing. We all know that it's a bad idea and we all tell others like, yeah, I mean, you probably shouldn't Google, you know, your medical stuff. You should probably talk to like a doctor before you do that. And like, I understand everyone's going to have to do some Googling, right? Or like if your doctor tells you something that sounds fucking weird or off or fucked up, yeah, go Google it, you know, take a look, maybe Googling it and then get a second medical opinion. But like, it, you know, it didn't help me to just be like, well, if you do need surgery, it's like the worst thing. A lot of people were comparing it to childbirth because a lot of people get hemorrhoids during childbirth or being pregnant. And many were like, I would rather deliver a baby than have that surgery. And they're just like, the pain is like a 9 or a 10 for about 2 weeks. And I'm just like, wow, that sounds intense. But more than that, I think, so, you know, I spent like 2 weeks kind of freaking myself out because I was like, oh, shit. And, you know, you wonder, because when your referral is to a surgeon, you just wonder, you're like, well, is a surgeon going to tell me, you know, is a surgeon the hammer and every problem is a nail? You know what I'm saying? Or is a surgeon going to tell me like, well, I mean, you could do that, but here's what I would suggest instead. But I went and saw the surgeon, and that's almost exactly what happened. So he was like, yeah, I mean, you know, he's like, I think this will resolve pretty nicely within about a month or so. And he's like, we could have a follow-up if you want, or, you know, you could always come back if you need to. The door's open, but basically, you know, gave me a pamphlet, which I've gotten like 3 or 4 of at this point, of like, managing your hemorrhoids. You know? And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty aware of all the things. So anyway, but like I spent, you know, 2 weeks worried about a surgery that I might not even need to have. And it was, you know, that's like a fiction, right? That worry is about a fictional surgery, is, you know, in terms of my reality at this point, or like a hypothetical surgery. And it's like, well, you could still feel real things. That's for damn sure. I think overall, too, with like Dr. Google, you know what you got to do? You have to do it because you can't not do it, but you just got to limit yourself. You know what I mean? And once you're hitting the things that you're like, okay, I think I at least understand what's happening to me and understand the plus minus. I got the basics, right? And I know which questions I need to ask and so on. And like, once you're there, it's like, okay, it's probably time to stop. Because anything I get from here is just going to be, I mean, some psychopath on Reddit. Or, you know, sometimes things don't go well for people. And that can happen. And it's like, well, I don't know that it's helpful for me to read about that. You know what I mean? But anyway, I'm doing better. I'm recovering slowly, you know, I'm overall in a better place, but this has been a tough 2026 for Pete so far. It's like, I got my face smashed by the garbage can lid and had to go to urgent care. I had food poisoning like 2 days after that, which took like 2 weeks to recover from. After that is when I got super constipated, which resulted in having a hemorrhoid, which then I had to go to urgent care again to have that. Like, I haven't had a solid, like, 2 weeks where I've just been, you know, fine so far in 2026. So I think that's what I'm going for, is just a couple weeks of, like, I haven't been thinking about, like, my latest injury. You know what I mean? I haven't devoted brain power to it. I went and did a thing. I saw a high school play at my former high school. Now, it's not because it was my former high school. I always thought this would be kind of a fun thing to do, to like go out with some friends and go to a high school play, probably a little drunk. You know, I don't know. I just thought there'd be there's something very funny to me about some elements of high school plays. It's like, it has a lot to do for me with like the choice of play that they pick sometimes. Like, whenever they do Shakespeare or something, and it's like a bunch of the characters are supposed to be adults, and like, I get it, fuckers, okay? Like, yeah, in Shakespeare's day, you were an adult when you were 16 or whatever, and it's like, okay, but that was a long-ass time ago. That was back in the Vermis days, all right? Lost Dungeons and Forbidden Woods by Plastiboo. Things are really different. But there's something very funny to me, and it happened in this play of, the play, what was it called? The Drowsy Chaperone. And it was a musical about, you know, a wedding that was maybe not going to happen and then did. But there are several characters who are supposed to be like kids playing like an old man. And I just think it's so fucking funny to watch like a high school kid trying to be old, because you're like, well, I see what you're doing. Like, you know, and yeah, I believe this is your perception of old people, which is a little hurtful, but not so hurtful because I guess I'm not that old yet. Because, you know, they're on the fucking stage. They're being an exaggerated old man. Right. So it's not like they're like, well, I'm going to try and meticulously copy an old man's mannerisms or something. It's like, well, no, I'm going to be a pretty big version of an old man as opposed to a reasonable old man. But, you know, it's like this old guy is like jumping up and down from his chair all the time throughout the movie. And I'm like, or the play. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, there's no way you wouldn't get up and down that much because the old people wouldn't do that. His phone keeps ringing and it's like all the way across the stage. And it's like, yeah, I mean, come on, man. He had a gossip table right next to his chair, which is like a little coffee table, usually two tiered. And it's like, that's what that was for. You put your phone on it and you put it next to your chair. So then you make all your phone calls and do all your gossiping. I'm like, that old man's, the phone would be right next to his chair. So he didn't have to get up and go across the apartment. It's funny too, because it's like the whole stage is there and it's like his apartment is huge. And I was thinking about how, you know, it's something I'm tired of. I'm tired of when people say that, like, when they complain about like the show Friends and they're like, they live in this fabulous giant apartment or whatever. And like, I've seen the show Friends and I'm like, yeah, they live in a pretty nice apartment or whatever. But I'm like, it's not fucking huge. You know what I mean? It's not like insane. But also I'm like, guys, it's a TV show. Like they have to put cameras and lights and things in there. And they have to like, people have to move around in the space and stuff like that. And I'm like, it would be pretty unrealistic. It would be so difficult to film a TV show like in a tiny apartment. And then like, you know, Seinfeld, like Jerry gets no credit for living in a tiny apartment. Like his apartment did feel to me like about the size of what a New York apartment is probably like. And he's supposed to be pretty successful in the show, I think. And it's like, well, no one's ever like, yeah, man, Seinfeld, those guys did it. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. It's like, it's such a dumb complaint. Or like people complaining about Home Alone. And it's like, how the fuck does this family afford this giant house? And like, they're all going to France or whatever. And I'm like, guys, it has to be a giant house because you have to have a bunch of places for like paint cans to hit Joe Pesci in the face and like a, you know, blowtorch and icy steps and a treehouse out back that you zip line to. You know what I mean? Like that you need it to be like that for the sake of having a movie. I'm like, I don't think it's like, it feels like people want to make this point about that being like tone deaf or something, you know, or it's like, that doesn't feel real to me. Like that was nothing like where I grew up. And I'm like, yeah, of course not. If it was where I grew up, there would be no movie. Cause I would just be like, well, I mean, instead of setting traps, I would just have to like blow away Daniel Stern with a shotgun. And you know, that doesn't really leave a good taste in anyone's mouth. Right. Taste of blood in Daniel Stern's mouth, but everyone else is ew, no thanks. So, you know, but no one ever complains about that when it comes to like a play. And I'm like, the apartments and stuff in plays are fucking humongous. It's like a whole stage. I was like looking at this old man's apartment and it's got like a kitchen and, you know, a little sitting area and a door. And I was just like, it's enormous. It's literally large enough to have a big musical number with like 20 people in it. I mean, that's crazy, right? But we went to this play and like we went to it because a friend of mine, her son is in the play and he had like a pretty big part and he was great. He was very funny and he was like the comic relief. So that was good because I was like, I have a disability where I cannot determine whether someone's good at acting or not. Like when someone's in a TV show or something and everyone's like, he is so good. You know what I mean? And I'm like, yeah, yeah, probably. But with funny stuff, I feel like I can understand. You know what I mean? I know if something's funny or not. I don't necessarily know about acting or like, oh man, his accent is so bad, but with a funny thing, I can do it. So it was fortunate for me because I was like, oh, I can actually like understand the good qualities of this performance. It's a language that I speak this time. I have to say, though, I was like, it was too long. It was like two hours ish. And I was just like, man, I think like 45 minutes into it, I was like, oof, this is going to be long. I mean, I'm not a musical guy. You know what I mean? Poonmaster Flex and I were talking about it, and she was like, okay, so rank these in order, right? Musical, play, opera, ballet, which you'd be most interested in. And I was like, well, definitely a play, right? Because I'm like, a play, I'm like, it can at least have things in it that I am interested in. It has writing in it. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. It has writing and like there's dialogue and there's like a plot. So, you know, that's something that I'm generally interested in. I mean, I'm not like a play guy. Like, I don't really want to go see a play. There's something about it that it just feels very artificial, I guess, which is funny to say because it's just like, I don't know, with AI taking everything over and you're like, maybe people will start going to plays because they're like, well, I know it's real. You know what I mean? If it's not on a screen, if some guy is actually doing it, I guess there's like a benefit there. But, and then I was like, I guess after that would be musical because it's like, well, there's still like writing and elements of music and stuff. And like, then it gets tough, right? Between ballet and opera. I just saw there was a thing. It was so funny because we were talking about that. And then it was like Timothy Chalamet was like saying that people don't like ballet and opera or no one goes or whatever. And I was like, it seems like people are mad about it. And I'm like, I mean, he's not wrong. You know what I mean? And I saw some article that was like, it's true. And it's like, it has been going down lately. Like several years ago, about 2 to 3% of people went to the opera every year. And it's gone down from that. And I'm like, 2 to 3%? That's like nothing. It's gone down from nothing to less than nothing. But okay. I think I decided I would probably go to the ballet before the opera. I think opera's at the bottom for me. Like, I don't care about dancing at all. I do not give a shit. But I was like, I don't know, maybe there's at least something in the athleticism I could appreciate and understand. It's hard. It's hard to like watch a sport, if I can call it that for a second, that you don't understand. You know what I mean? Like, if you go to a hockey game and you've never been on skates and like you don't really understand the fundamentals of how hockey is played, it's difficult to enjoy because you're like, I don't really know what's going on, and it just doesn't look impressive because I don't know how difficult what that person just did is. You know what I'm saying? Or like singing in the musicals a little like that, like, you know, when they really go for it and sing some big note, I can understand. I'm like, oh, that's probably a difficult thing to do. But it's like, if I go back to the musical, the reason that's below a play too is like, the kind of music in musicals is just not something I care for. You know, I don't care for the lyrics because I think they're often like cute and clever or whatever, as opposed to being like, I don't know, more stirring, which is what I prefer in a song. And like, there's not a lot of fucking skeleton popes, you know, singing about shit. It just seems to be a lot of singing about like what's going on that moment in the play. And I just don't care about that. I do not care. But and it's like, it's not a genre. I would never listen to music from a musical like in the car or something. You know what I mean? And if someone else wanted to do that, I'd be like, oh, could we listen to anything else or possibly nothing, or possibly just me complaining about musicals for the next hour? I'm giving you like five different options of things we could do that are not that, that I would prefer. Or you could just try to convince me the entire time. Sell me on it. Tell me what you think is fun about this. But yeah, opera's at the bottom. Because like, similar to how I feel about acting, where I can't understand what acting is, I think like singing is something that I also don't really understand. And opera is like an entire other level of not understanding because like, I don't know, man. I'm not going to know what it's about. I don't understand what a good opera is or a good opera singer. You know, I'm ill-equipped to comprehend anything about it. And it's like I would feel very trapped there. And I did feel a little trapped at the musical, you know, just because it's like it's long and whatever. And then the intermission happens. And I was like, oh, fuck, because my memory of because I've been to plays and my memory is that usually the intermission is like 2/3 of the way through or maybe something like that, as opposed to half, which I don't fully understand, except I mean, I do. In that I prefer that because it's like, oh, yeah, then, you know, we're 2/3 of the way through. We can make it. But if you're someone who liked it, I'd be like, I don't know, halfway seems to make a little more sense to me than like 2/3. But, you know, I was like, hopefully my memory is correct and it is closer to over than halfway. And it was. And that's not me shitting on like the kids or anything. Like they were great. They were fine. It had nothing to do. This is like my inability to enjoy or understand musicals. I would really have no. I don't think I would see a ton of difference between seeing a high school musical and seeing a Broadway musical. For me, it wouldn't be that different. And so, you know, it's just not whatever. But yeah, that's a thing we did. That's the thing I did. I left my home and went into the world and saw high schoolers pretend to be old people or people about to get married or a starlet who was maybe going to end her career and get married instead. Which these just all, it was just funny because it's like, that seems very unrelatable when you're like 17. You know what I mean? Like, I think I've had my career being a star and I'm ready to settle down. It's like, okay. It just doesn't, I don't know. There was something about like sitting in the audience and watching high schoolers do that. And I was like, you have some memory of what it was like when you were in high school and you're like, your whole life's in front of you. And you're like, maybe I'll do this or maybe I'll do that. Or like you would see a play and, you know, you would know the people in the play. And so it was a very different experience to see a high school play when you were also in high school because you knew who all these people were. Whereas like going as an adult, I didn't know who fucking any of these people were except for the one kid who I knew. So it was like, well, I don't know. For all I knew, it was like, well, yeah, that lady, that's the chaperone, that lady. You know what I mean? That's the groom. That's the butler who is supposed to be an old man. And has a total baby face, but he does have silver paint in his hair. So I guess, you know, it's funny to me they do that, right? They're like, let's put some silver paint in his hair or something. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know. He doesn't really look older. He just looks like a kid with silver paint in his hair. It's like he was being Dracula for Halloween and was like, went a little hard on the spray in his hair or something. Maybe that would be like a good one is to see like a Dracula or something and just see like, I don't know, a 15-year-old trying to be Dracula. Something about that would be amazing, I think. I have had these thoughts lately about writing a vampire book. I was like, maybe it's time for me to go down that road because the idea is basically it would be a bunch of short vignettes about Dracula. The first one I came up with a while ago, and it's about basically Dracula keeps getting in trouble because he's always biting like very popular, very busty ladies in the village. And they kind of have like a city council meeting with Dracula about it. And they're like, look, could you like not go after the prom queen every year? You know what I mean? Couldn't you find... It'd be like if Dracula was real and he was killing Miss America every year. And he's just like, what? You know, whatever. And maybe he gets a little defensive when they're like... There are lots of these, you know, hefty gals that you've never gone after. And he's like, what are you implying? You know, stuff like that. But the other one, I mean, it's like in a similar vein, but it's kind of Dracula complaining about like, he's like, well, I'm trying to like, you know, enchant these people and kind of hypnotize them. But I just have a hard time because their names are bullshit like Kylan and Montana. And he's like, I can't, you know, captivate them when I'm saying, yes, Montana. Like, I just can't do these like modern names and make that work. It just doesn't work for, you know, Dracula's vibe is all thrown off because he's fucking stupid names that people name their kids. All right. Well, there you go. That's Vermis, Lost Dungeons and Forbidden Woods by Plastiboo, a book that I read and then kind of told you about before telling you about, once again, my butthole. My hope is that next episode, I won't have anything to say about my butthole. You know what I mean? That's the sign that things are going well for me. If I have nothing to say, no news is good news on the butthole front, right? Like, you really just don't want to hear very often, like, I have a lot to tell you about my butthole. I mean, I guess you do. You're listening to this, so you must, you sick fucks, but like, for the most part, yeah, you just want it to be, I really have nothing to say about my butthole. It's just, you know, being a butthole. All right, we'll see you next time. Talk about two times. Talk about one. Asking the questions that nobody could.